We are live on Twitter, live on YouTube. The interwebs, all of the web is able to participate with our glorious podcast.
Oh, this is actual live or live later?
We're going live.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that.
No take backs.
We're going. No take backs. We're here. You're live.
It's about to get a lot more boring up in here, guys.
What was that you guys were showing on the camera right before you started streaming?
What the Lord has given us to help our bodies to function the way He intended.
Yeah.
Although I just realized that without context, people are going to think that's like marijuana or something, especially given Island Boys. So, just welcome everybody. Welcome back to the podcast that we have not yet named. We're like when you have a baby in India, okay? For those of you who don't know, if you have a baby in India, sometimes they'll go 6 months without naming that child. So we're planning on doing something similar. We might call this TGFB and the Island Boys. We might call this TGFB and the mixed martial arts competitors. You know, you just never know. TGFB and the I Teach My Children to Code. I mean, there's potentially just a ton of potential names. We'll see where we go.
Just for the record, we are not the demonized martial arts practitioners, but we know some who are.
Yeah, we love them.
We'll go into that story another day. We got to save it for the podcast. Well, I guess we're on the podcast. Anyhow, Oshawa, how you doing, man?
Good. Yeah. You want me to share something? You want me to get rolling? Or you want me to share your thing?
This is your podcast, Oshawa. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, here.
We're just doing intros here, bro.
I will tee you up, okay? You get to share your video.
Oh.
Are you wanting to play this video?
No. It's an hour and a half long, so no.
Okay, we are not going to play this video.
I was just thinking we could do more of like a, you know. Ryan, how are you, man?
Good. Yeah.
Glad to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Matt. Week.
Yeah.
Matt, and
of course, he's sharing his own post because he likes self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
You're the worst.
Anyhow, read your post, Jordan.
As we are wont to do, we are back, and on this podcast, what we do is we just take a look at a tweet or two that we appreciated. All right, we all spend time on Twitter. We all find things that are either encouraging or funny or convicting or some a mixture of the three, and so we're here to do that today. So the main thing that stuck out to me from this last week was we finally have, as of this morning, the full video, or I guess last night, the full video of the debate that I was privileged enough to take part in, went up to Moscow, Idaho. Was invited to come up there by the Cross Politic guys, hosts of that show. So, Gabe Wrench, Chocolate Knox, and Toby Sumter, and we did a debate between a. It was like a bad joke, a gold guy, a Bitcoin guy, and a stonks guy. Walk into a cigar shop, which is where we did the debate. It was a great time. I'd known all these guys before. We'd had not formal conversations, but just informally ribbed each other and, you know, pointed out the gaping holes in their logic and, just tried to talk them away from, you know, leading the church into grave error by, continuing to invest in things that are doomed to fail for any one of a number of reasons. But the Lord was super kind and got to meet a whole bunch of people, just have a good old fashioned argument, and in a self controlled and God honoring way. So grateful to those guys. I don't know if there's. I don't know if there's specific questions you have. I guess we could kind of talk about what some of their big objections were. One of the themes that happened that I was kind of expecting, but not completely, was that me and the gold guy, who's actually a friend of mine named Jim, we kind of were having each other's back the whole night because you have this other guy who's representing Dominion Wealth Management or Dominion Wealth Strategies, and basically stocks, bonds, that. Quote unquote traditional finance, although we all laughed about the fact that, again, gold's been used as money for thousands of years. So calling something that's been around for like 70 years traditional is somewhat rich. He was kind of representing, you know, Normieville. And so we just you know, me and the gold guy went back and forth just talking about first principles and talking about, you know, truth and why that matters. And, you know, even if you can resist truth for a period of time, but you can't do it forever. And so this has been demonstrated throughout human history with things like gold and now with Bitcoin. So yeah, we talked through a bunch of different stuff like that. So, yeah, I was really grateful for that opportunity and grateful for, yeah, just to have a platform to kind of talk about Bitcoin with, in concert with other stuff.
I'd be curious, what either objections or misunderstandings you think came up there that you believe might apply broadly to other people.
Yeah, I think one of the first things that came up was just the concept of intrinsic value.
Mm.
And obviously there is a sense in which there's confusion about what it is and what does it actually mean. So some people think that intrinsic value means that the monetary value of something is always going to be there. You know, that something will always, its monetary value will always be perceived at a certain level. And that's just not real, as we've seen with gold. Gold, you know, ought to be at least, you know, denominated. Its purchasing power ought to be a lot higher than it is, given reality. But it's not at any given one time. But what we kind of got into was like just defining intrinsic value and just the fact that like gold and Bitcoin have certain properties that are true of them regardless of what's going on with the outside world.
Right.
That make them valuable. So we kind of talked through that.
Cash flows, Jordan. Actually, the stocks have cash flows.
Yeah, we didn't get into that, which, I mean, I wish we had. I wish that had come up, but it did not. One of the things that was hard for them was to grasp just the concept of like why isn't Bitcoin fiat? Like that was again just a confusion of terms. That was something that we kind of had to talk through because they're like, why is this not just fiat? Just some guy created Bitcoin. You know, I could theoretically create my own cryptocurrency. How is that? You know, not just fiat. And so, kind of talked through that. Just talked through like again, theoretically, I could start a shoe company that technically on paper would rival Nike, but I have to, you know, get people to. You know, desire or demand my thing, and that's not easy to do. And so Bitcoin's, you know, Bitcoin has first mover advantage and has properties that differentiate it from other stuff. Mm. Beyond that, I'm trying to think what else.
I wonder if you guys would be interested in what is the distinction in your minds between the term Bitcoin and blockchain? Mm. Maybe it's not interesting, but I feel like I've always kind of been more on the married side of those two things, but I realize it's actually helpful to differentiate it too, because blockchain is, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a technical, blockchain is not how all the other ones work, like Ethereum and them, is it? It's more of a Bitcoin thing, but yet Bitcoin is Bitcoin.
Yeah, blockchain is the technology that the founder of Bitcoin invented. Essentially, is how do you create a decentralized database that's run on nodes scattered around the world and hold the transaction so that you can have digital scarcity. So blockchain is what people say when they're trying to talk generally about the technology and all of the different cryptocurrencies that use that technology. So Bitcoin is just the original blockchain and the, you could say, the 0-1 innovation of that technology, and blockchain is kind of like the generic way of saying general crypto without being specific about Bitcoin.
So that's something I don't quite understand. So which cryptos are on blockchain versus any other method, or are they all blockchain?
Jordan, you want to explain the trilemma and how they blockchains choose to solve that?
Yep. Oh man, it's been a minute. Okay, so basically, yeah, so there's something called Buterin's trilemma, named after Vitalik Buterin, the founder of Ethereum. He basically, I guess, was the, I can't believe he was the first person to do this, but I mean, more power to him if he was. But basically there's like it's a trilemma, so a triangle, and basically the image is like the graphic is a triangle. And so basically you can only ever have two of these things to start out with. And so you have decentralization. What is it? What are the other two, Ash?
I'm going to give you an image so you can...
Oh, cool. Do it.
You can talk about it.
I'm like, of course, when you call me on the carpet, I'm not going to be able to remember what this is. Decentralization.
Here we are. Here you go.
It's not...
Window. Here you go.
Doesn't want to share. Okay, here we go. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Decentralization, scalability, and security. So you can only ever have two of these things to basically start out with. So you've got... So in the case of Bitcoin, what Bitcoin chose to have was chose to prioritize decentralization and security and sacrifice scalability. So basically, Bitcoin on its base layer has a limited throughput of transactions that can be included with every block. So there's people who, one of the big complaints that the altcoin people give about Bitcoin is that, it's too slow, or it's too small. The blocks are too small to include enough transactions to allow, something like the entire world to use it. And again, the Bitcoin people come back, the Bitcoin maxis, enlightened ones that they are, come back and basically say, yeah, no, that's because this trilemma is here. And if you were to prioritize any of the other two ways that you could do this, it's going to end up breaking. So, and it's not going to be as secure. So if you prioritize scalability and decentralization, then, you're sacrificing security, and then you're in basically the same situation that we're in right now. It's easily hacked by other people, easily hacked by governments. It's a lot more vulnerable. Or if you prioritize scalability and security at the expense of decentralization, well, then you've got a centralized, that's basically the existing financial system is, gives you scalability and security, but it's a centralized thing, and there's centralized points of failure and all the downsides that go with that. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, would it be accurate to say that the Bitcoin community's part of our response would be to say things like the Lightning Network and other add-ons fix that problem? And perhaps the way I would put it is, yes, there's a more of a level of trust and therefore security issues that you might say, I have to trust Lightning for the moment. But they earn that trust, and it's not maximum trust because you can still move that wealth onto the blockchain. I'm sorry, straight into Bitcoin would be a better way of saying it. Is that an accurate way of saying how a response would be from a Bitcoin perspective?
Yeah. Go ahead, Ash.
Oh, yeah. It's a solution of layers. So you're not trying to do everything on the first layer of the blockchain, but you're building on top of it.
So you've got the Holy of Holies, and then you've got like the court of the women.
Let's go.
And then the court of the Gentiles.
Exactly.
That's right. You can't let those Gentiles in immediately. That's why God had to wait until the New Testament. This is great. This is a great thing. It's working great.
And then there's exchanges going in there just like they were doing back then, but that's another...
Here's an example that I actually gave during the debate. One of the big fallacies that people fall into, or just mistakes that they make, is they criticize Bitcoin for not being... like they criticize Bitcoin or even other monies for not being all three of the things that good money is all at once. So like money ought to be a store of value, a medium of exchange, and a unit of account. But so a lot of people, they see Bitcoin and they see, oh, Bitcoin's not even being used. So how can Bitcoin, it's not actually a medium of exchange. And the fact that a large group of people aren't recognizing something or aren't using something in a certain way is not an indication that it actually is weak in those areas.
Right.
And the example that I give of this is, okay, is Jesus Lord? The answer is yes. Okay. Now there's still billions of people who do not recognize that Jesus is Lord. Does that change the fact that he's Lord?
No.
No, it doesn't change it whatsoever. So Bitcoin can be used as a medium of exchange, a store of value, unit of account. There's nothing inherently weak about Bitcoin that prevents it from being used those ways. And so, again, it's a natural process for people to adopt and understand and begin to recognize the inherent, characteristics that Bitcoin possesses.
Maybe a parallel is like before money became real fiat, it was backed up by gold. Mm-hmm. And at that point, so long as the gold is really there, you're adding a little layer of now the trustless part of Bitcoin. The irony is the more trustless it is, the more you can trust it. You know, so the trustless, now you have to trust the government that the gold is in Fort Knox, actually,
yep.
and that it is represented, and now you're trading with those bills, but they're actually backed by gold, and if you choose to, you can go redeem at any time. And when that changed, yes. so maybe that's a decent analogy to Lightning being the one, I can trust them for these transactions, and maybe I have X amount in the Lightning network. But I can back it up with gold anytime. I can back it up with digital gold.
Yeah. Yeah, and with Lightning, right, like you don't have to, I mean, you can lock up your own Lightning channel. Like you don't need to ask permission from, you know, somebody else, you know, to do that.
Right.
But, yeah, so anyway, so that was the big takeaway. Had a lot of people who, you know, came over and said they were encouraged by it, they were helped by it. So yeah, hopefully again they filmed it. They filmed it with like four or five video cameras. So they did it. They did a really good job. It looks super professional and stuff. So
yeah, very cool. See where it goes. Keep doing the good work, Jordan.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ryan.
That's cool.
Why don't we go up to the great Northwest? What's shaking up in your edge of the woods?
Yeah, you want me to share my topic?
Yeah, do you want me to share? Here, is this the convexity principle?
Yeah, so this came from a tweet from Joe Lonsdale. It was like a little two-minute video, and he was just talking about a Peter Thiel piece of advice, and I was just ruminating on it a little bit earlier today. And it's just a lot of wisdom, especially applied to a Christian context. The principle, it was called the convexity principle, and essentially that, he used the example of like the difference between somebody giving like 80% effort versus 90% effort is like the returns were exponentially higher just from like, it's like doing anything average is like, not that big of a deal, but it's the people that are willing to put in a significant, that extra 10% effort really has a huge impact on the output. And so it was, I threw it into Grok, and Grok spat out, three primary areas, Christ is supreme, time with God, prayer, scripture obedience yields eternal and compounding spiritual returns. It's the ultimate convex investment, and 100% agree. Spouse and family being second, which again is huge. And I would say like the first one, Christ, that obviously that's the biggest one. But the spouse and family one, man, I that's a little bit, that's convicting. I think as men, it's easy. We can get tempted into making big areas of our lives kind of like check boxes that we just kind of do. But we don't always like intentionally do really, really well. Like I think everyone knows, like, are you doing your absolute best? Are you putting in 80, 90% effort on something? And, and I just wonder how common of a struggle that is. I know that there's been times over the last 20 years of being a dad, it wasn't the highest percentage on those areas. But by God's grace, like he's kept working in my heart, and, that especially with spouse and family, that's increased, and my relationship with Christ, but the number three was probably the biggest conviction because I'm sure you guys struggle with this to a degree also, but just, the work projects or the projects, business ideas, how easy it is to do things, but do too many things. And then, instead of, ending up with a project or something you're working on that like significantly moves the needle or becomes an excellent product, or you like your craft, instead of becoming like known for that craft, like you're just average. And that was convicting because the reality is you can't be excellent at a ton of, like, it's very difficult to be excellent at a ton of different things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I think my main takeaway was, especially in that area, like, it's good to prune. And, like, he was actually talking, like, in the work area, like, when he, I think he was mentioning, when he invests in companies, like, if the founder, they have to be 100% all in on it. And if they're doing anything else, he's just not interested at all. Mm. And it's just, like, because it's that big of a thing, like,
yeah,
whenever someone's time is split, yeah, it's just, it's not going to make it. Anyways, I don't know. That hit you guys at all, or...
Yeah, I mean, we chatted about this a couple months ago when we were talking about our own life decisions and priorities and the reality that as entrepreneurs who see opportunities, who are given opportunities, who are already in a stage in life where we're needing to pick and choose from good, better, best type of options and how we invest our time, It's just so essential to have a framework for narrowing down and saying no to things.
Yeah.
I had some opportunities with church ministry where I could have jumped in at it. I wanted to be a part of the relationships and contribute to my church. And then I have these kids that we're preparing to launch into the world and that are in significant stages in their life where like the age of opportunity. These are times where they're making life decisions that are going to set trajectories that are going to have effects in for decades.
Yeah.
And
these are your kids you're talking about, just to
clarify. My own kids. And so do I step out and do this great church thing, or let's say it's a good church thing, or do I look at my own sphere of responsibility and a lever is the or a pulley is the other analogy of this convexity principle, right? What are the levers that I have that, dude, just praying with my kids before bed, just being present, dating my daughters, having enough time to check in with my wife, how are we doing? Like, there's little things that just have such exponential returns, but those little things get scheduled out so easily. And so we were talking, Ryan, about how to even as brothers keep each other accountable and say, okay, what are your top five?
Yeah.
What's your convexity and your lever with your relationship with God, with your family, and with the key things vocationally that God's put before you, and then everything else, trim it down. Mm. And I think it's good to add, like, church. So if you're not in ministry, then church community should be a part of that on this list, and you could put it. I think it's wrong to put it right with Christ because it should go behind family and spouse. But I think church should be there. But still, like, what are those things that you need to do and then just say no to other things? And then this idea of checking in with the brothers, be like, hey, I have an opportunity, guys. Jordan Bush wants me to do a podcast. What do you think? Should we do it? those are my thoughts.
Yeah, he's like, I can only do this if I bring the Island Boys. I was like, all right, fine. All right, done. That's, I guess.
Yeah, it was like, I want to say two and a half years ago. You could call it just like a mini spiritual awakening. Like, you know how you kind of go in seasons, and the Lord really was just getting a hold of my heart again. And I started really sensing it because my boys were now, they're 16, 18, 19. And so I was really feeling this pressure of like, oh man, like they're
how
about
old
to be.
Were they when that happened, when that started?
We'll just say about 3 years ago. So,
okay.
Don't make him do math.
15, 16, and 11.
Okay.
So,
don't make the programmer do math.
11, 15, 16.
AI fixes this. You won't have to remember that.
Yeah, I know. We need it.
Ryan's only a vibe coder. Just to set the record straight.
We need this. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just say, I know I'm interrupting you, but like I just want to encourage you. Like, Ryan, you are one of the most convicting people in my entire life. I just want you to know this. Like, because like I just think about, and like in the best possible way, because like I look at my, again, I look at my kids and I mean, I've got a, oh gosh, 13-year-old boy, 12-year-old girl, 9-year-old boy, 4-year-old boy, and then another one on the way. And like, I look at your boys and I, and like, again, this is a whole nother episode we need to do, just kind of talking through, you know, just again, part of, I guess, what you're, you know, what you have started to focus on the last 3 years and really just given your, a lot of your attention to. And like, I just think, I'm like, oh my gosh, man. So I, that's actually super encouraging to me that it was about 3 years ago. Cause that's kind of right on my own timeline. So, but yeah, cause I just think I know so few people who think and act and live as intentionally as I, you know, as I've kind of seen with you guys, as in thinking about what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to provide for family? Like if we prioritize these things, if we prioritize, you know, getting married and having kids and being able to provide for a family in a way that allow your wife to, you know, stay home and, you know, love and serve your kids rather than somebody else's kids or somebody else's bottom line of the, of their business. You know, what if that's going to be what we really want? Well, then what are the decisions that we need to make now to put us in a position to do that?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would love to, I don't know if now is the time, but would love to hear kind of just, I mean, you're kind of telling us. So yeah, unfold more about like what that initial process looked like. And
yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was, I think a lot of it was, I think there was like significant differences that, you know, the Lord had opened my eyes up and my wife's eyes up to, like, how we wanted to do things differently. We homeschooled the kids all the way through. Like, we wanted to just take responsibility of their education. Not just...
Out of fear or something.
It wasn't... It was more on offense, right? It wasn't just defense. It was offense and, you know... enabling and freeing them up to study and work on things. Like Moses started programming when he was 9, right? And so he spent 3 or 4 hours a day programming for the last 10 years. And you can't do that in a normal educational environment. Like that was his education.
Yep.
And it, a huge component of it. And, but it was still like, I think the, so we just did a ton of those things. Like it was just disciplining different, training different, homeschooling, wife stayed home, you know, and she did an amazing job. I think the thing that really hit me was it's easy to do really well at so many different of those areas and literally check them off, but miss that last, you know, 10 to 20% of effort where for me personally, it was like, you need to do really well on discipling your boys. Like, I mean, we needed all of our kids, but the boys are like being sent out first. And so it was like, I just felt like a burden of like, I got some catch up to do over the last few years. And so it was just a lot of extra time, and focus. Yeah, just tons of conversations, lots of books, lots of podcasts, early morning Bible studies with them, just going with them. Just getting more involved in our church and, you know, men's ministries, men's fellowship times. And, it was super, the Lord really blessed it and it's been really fruitful.
I'll jump in there too. I'm actually a great like use case because of my exact moment in my life right now. But, you know, this just came to mind now, you know, most older cultures have a kind of coming of age thing. Mm. Where you say you were a boy, now you're a man, you know, go off and hunt a wolf or, you know, whatever the different thing is. And I don't think we have to kind of grasp for that per se, but we should, you know, with Ryan, with you and your sons, we got to visit, you know, we talked about how we have 25 kids between us here. Mm. And we had like 26 in one house, not even a big house this last fall. It was our three families plus one more. And anyway, sitting down and talking theology and a lot of the things we're talking about now, and just having the boys, as well as my daughter was in there for a bit, my 13-year-old, and to just have them feel like, hey, you're wanted here. We want you to be here. We want to hear what you say. Also, hopefully they're looking up and gleaning the wisdom. And I think that's part of the, we're looking at you as a man now. We're looking at you as a young adult, even way before 18, hopefully, you know, and maybe that's just a spirit of invitation rather than some ceremony you have to do. But if you're not intentional, it's not going to happen. So, yeah, and I'll say, like, my life is right now in this moment is kind of a interesting case for this. So maybe I'll bring in the, like, encouragement side of the exhortation, you know. I think it's one of the dreams I've had to let die is that in ministry and in business, in family, in every part of life, I love the idea that I'm going to make a perfect system and then it's just going to hum on its own, you know? And what I've had to realize is that is absolutely just a fantasy. You always have to lean on wisdom. You always have to lean on management. And now I see it everywhere in scripture too. The good manager, the good investor, the good everything. The Lord is trying to prepare us for, I suppose, judging angels and ruling cities, God willing, in the coming kingdom. And he doesn't allow us to come up with a good system that functions. And so my encouragement, even to myself, is stuff changes incrementally. So, you know, I shut down, for people who don't know me, which is everybody pretty much, I shut down my 11-year business to the public last August. And this was a major, you know, it's not a major restaurant, it was a restaurant cafe. Not big in terms of money-wise and stuff, but tons of energy, employees, customers all love us. Everything was good. All the quality of the product is good. And the reality is, like, my wife and I are both kind of high energy, high output people. So it wasn't unloving to my wife to start off with. And, you know, we had two kids and she's going out there and getting it. And I'm going out there and getting it. And so it really does. It really takes wisdom to say, okay, as the years progress, what's changing, you know? And so there isn't a perfect system, but you have to be, you know, like Osh said, talking to your wife, taking time for that, checking in, is my relationship with my kids good? And so for different people, there might be varying levels of faithfulness and how much output you're doing in the world and how your relationship's doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's like a seasonality, like there's times where my seasonality of where, like, hey, this son like really needs me right now. Like we need to go, just focus in and spend more time together.
Because yeah,
of whatever and, reason.
You know. And so like where I'm at now is in the after this season, but I really haven't started the next season yet because my stuff is not in order, you know, and it may be 6 months from now, it might be whatever, but trying to figure out what that next season is. My relationship with my family is great. And so forth. But, going back to the encouragement part, I so sympathize with people who may have, come around to life in general or come around to the Lord a little later on. And maybe they can't afford to just take more time.
Sure.
Yeah. I feel very blessed that I'm able to do that. And probably most of us here are, and I feel like a season came around my early 30s where, what Osh was describing, I started to be really useful. You know, I could do this, I could do that, I could do the other. So then all these opportunities came.
Yeah.
And at that season, it's kind of like, yes, 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 that's great. These are all great. And those yeses have to start turning into nos because the opportunities are just going to keep coming as you're faithful with the things that come to you. And the default answer has to become no.
Yeah.
And then with interspersed yeses in between. And I don't know that I'm ever going to be a person that has one thing. I don't see that ever happening personally. I don't think it's possible. I don't even think it's desirable, but I think I would die, you know, if I tried to just focus in on one thing, but it still needs to be balanced. And, you know, when Ryan, when you were showing that convexity principle, it reminds me of Nassim Taleb's barbell principle too. It's not exactly the same, but the idea of you should go all in on high risk things and then not much in the middle, and then other things should be on the conservative side of growth. And I think that applies to so many areas of life. Shoot for the moon on certain things and know that you might lose it. And then otherwise, make sure you're dealing with the basics really well. And
we talk about this. We've talked about this in a different way, kind of this principle of, I don't remember if it was on this podcast or if just in general, but like the scriptures talk a lot about the principle of sowing and reaping, and it's such an important thing. It's such a central thing. Paul describes it in the end of Galatians. He says that God is not mocked, for what a man sows, that will he also reap. And so just thinking about, like, this is an example of, you know, like your kids are effectively, the Proverbs calls them like arrows in the hands of a mighty warrior. And so, like, you're going to let go of your kids someday and they're going to go flying off into the world. And your aim, like where you're aiming them and like what you're teaching them to value and mm-hmm. that kind of thing is going to affect, like it's going to affect where they're shot, what targets they're going to hit. And so there's, again, and one of the things that I think about, and that there's other people who've talked about this, is just, you know, succeeding at things that don't matter. And yeah. Like, you know, it's one thing to fail, but it's another thing to succeed at things that don't matter.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is, last night I was watching one of the NBA basketball games with my kids. And so I'm like sitting here, I'm like, probably like, I could probably think of like 30 like super more important things that I could do right now. But at the same time, I'm like, all right, you know, this is, we haven't gotten like good time to just like sit together. It's like, so it's like there is a scale, right? There's things that are more valuable to do. Hey, let's go. There's our buddy.
Just an image to illustrate what you're saying.
Exactly. And so now, first of all, you definitely want to spend intentional time in prayer and with your kids and like reading with the scripture, or reading the scriptures with your kids and talking mm-hmm. with your kids. But like with that said, like it's not like that every single, the only thing you can do, the only thing you ought to do is just read the Bible. Like that's just not it either. Like it's just spending time, in Deuteronomy, it talks about like when you, as you know, what their responsibilities to their kids, like when you stand in the way, when you walk, when you sit down, and just like talking with each other. And so that's one of the things that we were doing during the game. I was like explaining to them things, just telling them, you know, why they were doing certain things. Cause I have experience. I used to play, and then just, you know, kind of challenging and, you know, pushing back on some of the ways that these guys were talking to each other or the way that they're acting that were selfish and that had selfish consequences. And so just, you know, again, part of this is just, you're just trying to, trying to help your kids just think through and recognize that actions have consequences and think yeah. through just like sowing and reaping. And it's not just sowing and reaping, it's sowing and exponential reaping. Like you're going to reap exponentially more, the things that you give your mind to, you give your attention to, give, you know, whatever it is, you're going to get a lot more of it. Not just a, you know, one-to-one return.
Yeah.
So this is actually one of my favorite tweets, and it wasn't what I thought we'd talk about, but I think it just perfectly illustrates what we're talking about. So this is Bitcoin Mechanic, our fellow Christian Bitcoiner, great brother, and it's his wife who just snaps a picture of him chilling out on a Monday morning with his kids, and she says, "Build a life that lets you spend your Monday morning like this." So here's why I feel like this illustrates it so well. First, you have a happy wife who's just stoked that dad's at home and he's chilling out with the kids, okay? Dad is not forced to do the 9-to-5 and get in the rat race, right? There's some decisions that they've made, both in thinking wisely about finance, in investing in Bitcoin early and being involved in that world, that within Bitcoin, there's this principle, right, of convexity. You're gonna pull this lever and you're gonna hodl. There is exponential returns that come from that. There's an efficiency of effort in your work. Your value is being preserved. And so they've made decisions. And I mean, he could be employed. He could be overemployed and working on all these huge projects. And he's doing some cool stuff. But there's still a value of I'm gonna build a life that lets me work from home. I'm gonna build a life that lets me choose my own schedule and lets me prioritize my time with my kids and inviting my kids into what I'm doing. And that's something that I've seen in all of us. And it really is, she says, it's a life that you have to build.
Yeah.
It's not just a job. We're not just talking about, oh, figure out this job thing and so you can do it. It's not just you ought to have kids. It's actually a structuring of your life that allows you to prioritize the things that are going to be most valuable. And they are your marriage, which is a foundation of a happy home life that then you invest in your kids that are the foundation of a fun home life. I would, like you talk about, you just read the, don't need to just read your Bible with your kids. Well,
yeah.
I love nerding out on fun things. We just went archery. Like I took my kids, like, let's go take an archery class. And I bought them a bow and arrows. And now we're just shooting at targets. I honestly don't know if it's legal.
That's not like for wealthy people only. That's like, you know, I pulled out some fishing rods that have been shoved in the attic by somebody else, like 15 years ago, and we just started trying to go fishing, and then we ran into some Hawaiian fishermen, and then he's like, here's how you do it, and here's the fish you're going for, and you don't even need bait. You take the seaweed and put it on the thing, and then they eat, you know, that doesn't cost anything. That costs the gas to get there. Yeah. But I'm wondering wisdom from you guys too, but first of all, I want to say to any young men, this has been on my mind, any young husbands there, this kind of thing is the ultimate aphrodisiac also for your wife. I found out that, you know, she just wants you to talk to her, actually. And so that's just a little bit of advice for you guys out there. So, but anyway, you know, so thinking like, what if I was 35 years old, 40 years old, I have a few kids, and I'm just getting my act together. It doesn't change the principle, but how can someone, what are some things someone like that could think about? You know, like, I'm thinking like move, you know, somewhere that it works. What do you guys think are, cause people, when I see a lot of posts out there, people are literally hopeless about ever owning a home, about ever making enough to like, and the reality is it's out there. And also the reality is there's many people who are looking for faithful men. There's many people who are looking, who are might be on the wealthier side, who are looking to help people. And they don't advertise it on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, but they're there. Maybe that's a part of it. But what would you guys say? How would you advise someone who didn't take those steps before that life season?
I mean, I'll jump in just real quick. I think that the absolute most important thing is to find a really healthy church and get really plugged in. That's gonna pay off significantly, both because, I mean, you know, as a husband, you need other solid brothers, you know, surrounding you. You need to be sitting under the preaching of the word. You need good fellowship. And as your spiritual life goes, like, that's going to have a huge impact on your relationship with your wife and how she's doing. And it like, and then it spills down into like the entire aroma of your whole family. So like, if you don't have a healthy church, like, I literally think it's one of the biggest cases for like, pack it up and move. Like, I literally think it's worth moving for. And getting that. And then also, like, when it comes to work...
Plus housing and land, by the way, just throwing that in there. If it's impossible, guess what? There's a lot of places it's possible.
Yeah. And the work thing, I think there's such a massive shortage in, like, faithful workers that are just honest and willing to work hard. Like, I think you should, like, kind of design your life in reverse in the sense of, like... What do you want your life to be like? Do you want to be able to be around your family every day? There's a lot of jobs where you're just gone too much, and then the family ends up suffering or gets the short end of the stick. And so it's like when you're choosing between two different types of work, like, choose the one that enables you to carry out your responsibilities to your wife and your kids, and and that enables you to be a part of your church.
Can I share something real quick, guys? Screen share.
It's your podcast, Matt. Yes.
So yes, this is a post I put up a little bit back that relates to the, especially the housing part. I said, first principles truth about real estate. People think land is scarce. It's a little bit scarce. Good stewards are maximally scarce. Mm. So focus on that part. And I've seen that just in my life where I am not a huge real estate mogul, but I think I have, I have 7 properties right now. Mm. I got none of them from the MLS, and I didn't have any of them because I was rich. It was opportunities that came because people said, I like what you're doing. Mm. I wonder if you'd be interested in this. And that didn't cost anything. That just had to be with showing up and trying to be faithful with what I already had.
Mm. Man, that's incredible. It's also super encouraging. It's one of the things, I mean, yeah, I think there's like principles that ought to govern decision making, right? Like, I mean, we talked about family. Now, again, there's layers to that. So, like, this is, I'm just being totally transparent. This is something we've gone through in the last few months here is, you know, because there's, we obviously you have your immediate family, you've got your wife and your kids, but then you also have extended family. And so, like, we have been walking through, you know, like some like severe illness, you know, like, you know, potentially life altering illness with a family member. And we had this incredible opportunity to get this house. It would have involved moving about 12 hours away from where we are now and farther away from this, you know, family member. And I mean, this house was a steal. It was a 250-year-old house, a bunch of land, you know, 20 plus acres, all this kind of stuff. If we were just thinking about the 6 or 7 of us as a family, like, it was a no brainer. But as we were sitting there thinking about, you know, the extended family and, you know, just the other people, the consequences of us moving away for this dream thing for our family, like, it would have had very not good consequences for all these other people. And so, so I think that's another thing too. I would echo the church thing more than anything. Like, that's like, cause that's one of those things where it's like, you have to put on your own oxygen mask before you help somebody else. Like, that really is, I mean, having a good church, it's going to enable, it's going to give you the strength and the resources to be able to, you know, help your own family and your own, you know, bunch of people, other people around you. So, yeah,
people,
I think
people don't realize how much incredible opportunities there are, even financial, even work-wise, in churches. And I'll give you guys an anecdote, and hopefully this inspires somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like a super passionate evangelist guy that's in this area. He loves the Lord, former meth addict, huge, bigger than life personality. I hired him to do my bulldozing work because I needed someone who was like barely hanging on to sanity in order to knock these trees down, but not totally insane, you know? And he's over there evangelizing the neighbor while he's bulldozing and blasting worship music. And he's got a Jesus shirt everywhere he goes. And he's real. Okay, I'm not mocking his faith. But here's the anecdote. So he visits the church, our church one time, and he kind of grabs me at the end. And he's like, you know, church could be like, it used to be like they were sharing meals together and like building together and like, you know, you could fill in the blanks, all these things that are like community and relationship and caring for the sick and providing for people who need, you know, help. And I'm like nodding my head. I don't get much of a chance to answer because his personality, you know. And my thought after that, immediately after that conversation, is like, almost everything he describes I've experienced. But you don't show up to a church and be like, where's the building project? Who needs help? You know, who have you guys given money to lately? Who's been hiring who in the church? It happens because you're in that community. And so we've swung hammer with people and built homes, and we've taken care of people's kids when a parent died suddenly, and all these things. And I think there's a lot of people looking in on the church going, that stuff's not happening.
Yeah.
But actually it is happening. Mm. It's just, you're not there.
Yeah.
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 You're muted, Jordan. Yeah.
That was like a mic drop, literally. Mic.
Yeah, you dropped the mic so hard it dropped my mic. That was incredible. I was just gonna say, it is happening, but a lot of people just aren't talking about it. they're not telling other people about it. It's going on in secret, and because again, they've read the verses, if you do it to be seen by others, you've got your reward. And so yeah, there's tons of people who are just so, they're a lot wealthier than you think. They're a lot more generous than you think. And the reason that's the case is because they're not out there telling people about.
So, Jordan, what do you say to the guy or the community of guys that are too based for any actual local church? Right? Their theology is so pure that every church is too woke for them. And they're such hardcore Bitcoin maximalists that every church is too fiat for them. Yeah. And they find their true community through their internet chat groups.
Yeah. I mean, well, one of the things I would say is whoever would be greatest among you must be the servant of all. Like, that'd be one thing that I would say. Another thing I would say is obviously, like, Jesus came down, and like, Jesus was, you know, he was a rabbi, like he was a leader. And so, again, he started his own congregation to in a real way, but
sure, I joined his church, Jordan, but yeah, all exactly. The other ones, give me a break.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, that's, it's just that there's a level of immaturity like that. That's not maturity. That's, a level of immaturity. Now, obviously there are situations where, if you're, again, I could imagine a situation where this kind of thing happened, where in the
temporarily
in the obscure situation, you've got a Luther, but even Luther, that's probably a good example. Like, even Luther with the Roman Catholic Church was the one of the first ones to say, there are many faithful churches in Rome. There are many faithful, pastors. He's talking about this in a context. I mean, that was literally, they're saying, hey, give us money to get your loved ones out of purgatory. Like, this is something that was happening. And
he didn't break from the church either.
I know. Yeah. They casted him out. So I think that, I just think it's one of these things where you can, in the name of being a purist, just like basically rule out everybody so that you're the only righteous one who's left, And like, this is, it can be well-intentioned, but I think that, who is that? Elijah, who talked about that.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. And then God says, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I have 7,000.
Correct. Yeah. Elijah throws a pity party after he serves the Lord and then gets chased out in the wilderness. And the Lord's like, dude, calm down. And so I think that, it's very easy to think that it's easy for knowledge to puff up. Like, this is one of the characteristics of knowledge, is that, you get a certain level of knowledge, you think you have understanding, and it puffs you up. Mm. And this is something that we're warned against repeatedly.
Yeah.
So,
and I would say to someone like that too, if I had the chance, if you think that, your theology is off, and you're not a teacher, and you need a teacher.
Yeah, it's interesting. There is something I just thought about, is that Bitcoin is the entire concept of Bitcoin and understanding it is not something that is widely grasped. And so, for those who do understand Bitcoin and know and understand the significant, revolution that it's starting, in a sense, I think it does. It probably tempts you to think a little bit too highly. And I say personally, it tempts us to think too highly of ourselves, and then just because, you're like, oh, well, there's 100 other people, and there's literally maybe one that even comes close to understanding Bitcoin. You're just like, they're all fools. and they might be in certain areas, anyways, it's just that's not a helpful mindset, and it's a temptation for sure.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you're always gonna, and that doesn't mean, this is not some hunky dory thing where you have to have you have to have everything in agreement. It's just that's just not reality.
Yeah,
that's just not reality. You're never going to find a church that is this perfect situation. Where there's never anyone in it who you can look at them and go, look at this, look at this area of their life that's, got something that you calls out to you as being less than what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not real.
If the Galatians and the Corinthians were encouraged by the Lord and by Paul to just get with the program and stick with each other, probably the church you're having a problem with is almost in every case going to be better than those churches.
Yeah. Still redeemable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's important to have the perspective that we share on this call and perhaps other Christian Bitcoiners share. It's important to be a little yeast in the leaven of the body of Christ, or a little salt to just make life a little more interesting. I mean, just on Sunday, I'm wearing my Bitcoin Beach shirt that I got from Mike Peterson in El Salvador. And yeah, a couple young dudes walk up and they're like, okay, tell me. So what's your strategy? Like, should I buy Bitcoin? How should I buy it? How do you do it? And I don't go out seeking those conversations, but it's kind of word got around. And so almost every Sunday, someone comes up and wants to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah. my daughter pointed out to me, look, Dad, they accept Bitcoin donations now, and they put it in the bulletin.
Let's go.
And that happened because I helped set up our church to accept Bitcoin donations.
River.com/TGFB. Thank you, Ash. That's right. Amen. All of you.
You know, I just want to say, from a pastoral point of view, too, the power of the church, gathered church, there's a power that you have as a member that's actually more than your pastor. And let me describe it. If I preach a sermon like I do every week, but if I preach a sermon this last week, we have someone who lives down at Cinderland, and you two guys know what that means, which was featured as a cult on, what's that guy, Reza Aslan's cult show. And anyway, this guy's just started bringing everybody. He's finally fully committed, and he's like bringing, like, we had a transgender person, we had like this person, this Haitian lady who's probably demon possessed, and I've known her for years actually, but she just came around again. And here's the power. I'm up there and it's my job to preach the word and also to speak to people and pray for them and stuff, but it's almost like that's too direct. But when the members come around them and say, hey, who are you? Nice to meet you. Like, what's your story? There's an amazing power when the body's involved to come around people and really, like, maybe I don't have the words for it, but it's evangelism. It's like
exercise their gifts.
Yeah, exercising their gifts. It's backing up. Okay, this is what, you know, maybe we talked about Jesus is the only way. Surely we did. Maybe we talked about some sexual sin. Maybe we talked about, you know, whatever the Bible said that week. And for someone else to come along lovingly, it shows very practically, like, this is the outflow of what we believe. And they might be intimidated to talk to the pastor. Plus, pastor can't talk to everybody anyways. So, yeah. You know, rant over, but when you join in, you get to be a part of something that actually the pastor can't do.
Yeah. I wanted to also throw in something else about kids. And I was on a walk this morning with my wife, and I was asking her and just about potential topics that she thought might be helpful. And I had told her about what we talked about last week a little bit. One of the things she brought up was that, and this was just, I think this was prior to Bitcoin, or it was right around the time Bitcoin was invented, essentially, or released into the world, was just a low time preference, and how even early on I had spent a lot of time, again, just by God's grace, thinking a lot about the future in the sense of, like, what did I want my kids to, like, what did I want them to be able to do by the time they were done with high school? And you start thinking about that a lot in the early days, and it changes what you do with them in the years leading up until that point. And what do I want my kids, how do I want them to think about money? Again, 10 years out. And you're like, and then it changes. Like, you want them to learn, like, well, understand it and how to save and how to work hard and how to invest and all those types of things. But again, that comes from a foundation of, like, a low time preference. Which is one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin, and also one of the beautiful things about Christianity, because I think Christianity is low time preference.
Can you define low time preference?
Yeah, I mean, it's
marshmallow test.
Yeah. Well, I'll just pull it up. Individuals with a low time preference prioritize future outcomes over immediate gratification.
Yeah.
They're willing to delay rewards or incur short-term costs for greater long-term benefits. And more inclined to save, invest, plan for the future, values future rewards, you know, financial security, health, career growth. Yeah, and it's like, so you think about your, so again, my boys are the first three that are going to be shot out, but it's like, what habits do I want my boys to have when they leave the home? Like, I want them to be reading their Bible every day. I want them to be leading their families in devotions. Okay. Reverse engineer that one. How do you get your kids to do that?
Yeah.
It's like, we've got to do that, you know? And it's just like, it's not complicated. It's just, it's, you know, like literally it's just like making a list of the things that you want your kids to get. And, how do you want them to lead their own families? And you reverse engineer that, And it's not like that's the only reason you do it, but it's just another reminder of like, no, this is really important. Like, if you skip this out, like, just don't be surprised. Like, your kids are going to skip it out. They're not going to see it as important. And, but
I have an interesting thing that I'd like to throw in there and see what you guys think, on that. I thought about it back at near the beginning. So this is part of that challenge of always needing wisdom, always needing good management. Let's say you built up a company and you sold it and you made an exit and you had money and you can just spend not just Monday mornings, but as much time as you want not working with the family. It leads to me, in my mind, it leads to the same problem. Your kids now have never seen you working. So they don't know how to do what you did. That's an interesting like little twist also is, do we design our life so that our kids can be like next to me and see what I'm doing? Do we design our work so that it can involve family? You know, do we just talk about it a lot when we come home? Because getting wealth and just saying, I don't need to go to work anymore is also like the opposite end of the scale. Now you haven't really discipled your kids necessarily into your work habits.
Yeah. I think it's both. I think because 99.99% of people aren't going to be wealthy enough to literally not have to do their normal job. And so it's whatever your normal job is, I think to include your kids, like in the case of boys, it's like especially the boys, but include your kids as much as possible in your normal work so that they learn the goodness of work. But also, and I've just done this with my three boys, it's like, we prayed earnestly that the Lord would help us discern like how and what to encourage them into, like almost like what trade or what craft that they should learn. And Moses was programming. And so Moses and I have been building software projects for, well, at least the last 6 years.
Yeah.
Like a ton of time. And then also, so this is Elijah's was video production. So again, same thing. That took longer and a lot more prayer because he this is funny. He's into Legos. We're like, Lord, what is it? Like, how in the world does Legos have to do with, like, adding value to the world? And I literally, like, it was crazy, but I saw this Lego stop motion video, and I'm like, that's it. He could start making videos with his Legos, and he did, and that led to video production, which is now, like, he's literally...
Let's go.
That's what is... Like, he's... He's a full-time professional videographer. Like he does weddings and commercials, and he works with lots of different companies. And anyways, it just like help them start their own businesses, help them identify what they'd like to do, help them learn to work hard, and help them with a little bit of the marketing, and help like it literally help them figure out how to do the work. And which it just like Jordan was saying, it's a perfect way to find profitable things to do with the kids.
Yeah.
You tons of conversation, tons of time, and then they also get to experience the reward, and they're training themselves, like they're learning a trade. And
just quick book pitch: this is a good, almost like reference text for this conversation, and so it just goes through and lists the kind of historically what are the trades that are family centered. So that's one of the the test frameworks. Can you do it with your family? Can you involve your kids? Can a wife do it and still participate without having to leave the home and not raise her children? And is it durable? Is it anti-fragile? Has it stood the test of time? Is it going to get, like, AI'd, is now going to obsolete it? Yeah. So, just a great recommendation.
Well, and if I can praise my wife real quick, yesterday she set up a chiropractor appointment for herself and all the kids, like a $300 visit. And the kids and her baked up about that much worth of baked goods because we have this deal with them. And I couldn't believe, it was like 2 hours, and it was like two dozen scones, a pile of chocolate dip cookies, and all this other stuff. And I was just like, how did you pull, you know, you're leaving at noon. How did you pull this together, you know?
Yeah.
And so we traded the scones for chiropractic work. But that was, you know, that just, like, kids were all involved. They see how it practically works. That you could have gone and sold that for however much, hundreds of dollars, and you slapped it together in 2 hours.
Yeah. She's literally a world-class baker. And in 2 hours, your wife earns $300 in baked goods with your kids. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, something kind of a through line through all these is it's real easy, or all these subjects that we kind of talked about, is it's easy to see weakness and lack as an opportunity to get frustrated or to, like, run away. So you were talking about, like, the super base guy. He can't find a church that's perfect for him, so he wants to leave and go off on his own, or, you know, do whatever. And there are times, again, I know there are times to do things like that. But the same thing can be true with your kids. Like, there's times where I'm just like, I'm trying to do something, my kid's, you know, losing his mind. He's like, he's like being annoying or doing something. And it's just so easy to see the weakness and the annoyance or whatever it is, and just be annoyed by it rather than seeing it as an opportunity and just recognizing, okay, wait, there's a need here. I need to draw near. Like, yeah. I need to go over there and kind of step in. And sometimes it's just as simple as, you know, if I've been gone for a few days or something, like I was getting ready to leave. I hadn't traveled for like 6 weeks or 6 months. And then I've traveled twice this month. I was gone one time for 9 days and then another time for three, I think. And I was getting ready to, you know, pack the night before I was leaving for the second time. And I don't know how my daughter didn't realize, but I just told her, I was like, hey, I was like, Daddy just needs to go get packed. And she just started crying. And I was like, what in the world? I was like, just out of nowhere. And I was like, are you crying? Cause I'm getting ready to leave. And she goes, yeah. And so, like, I just went over and I just sat with her, just like sat with her and talked to her. And, you know, and again, we just talked through it. And again, and that was like all, you know, that was what it took. I just sat there and talked it through with her. And again, like, that's just the reality. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, listen to this and, you know, maybe you're not at this point able to work from home. And so, again, it's just, it's taking advantage of the time that you have and expressing and verbalizing and not just taking it for granted that people understand that you love them and understand that, you know, you don't want to get away from them, like that this isn't what's going on. And so, I think that's the other part of the distraction is, you just assume that a lot of things are understood and you assume that stuff is getting done rather than, you know, making sure that it's getting done or, you know, communicating.
I remember I had a similar experience. It was a handful of years ago. I was working on my master's degree. I was serving as an elder at a local church and interim pastor and plus my other work. And I was going off to an elders meeting, and probably my 8-year-old at the time, I just remember looking, and when he realized I was going to be gone in the evening again, and he just teared up and started crying. And you need those realizations to say, okay, I've said yes to too many things. Mm-hmm. I'm doing too many quote unquote good things, and I'm sacrificing the best. And that need to not be the Martha, but to realize your wife and kids, that's the better, the greater glory. Mm-hmm. And to choose to just be at home and to be able to let them know you're the most important person in Daddy's life. Mm-hmm. You get the best of Daddy. Mm-hmm. And the most important person that I can minister to is you, Not anyone else's kids.
Yeah.
Not some other dude and his, like, guys that want to meet with me and do a Zoom call because they want to find out about something or do something or come speak at our conference.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you get a point in life where you're getting all these invites, it might feel really good.
Yep.
But dude, no, you're going to have to convince me.
Yep.
Like, give me, like, so many significant reasons for me to show up to your event. Yep. Because I'm giving up time with my wife and kids.
Tickets for my kids.
Yeah, no, that's another thing. Your wife's friend, Bethany Hamilton, right? She's like, oh, you want me to speak at your conference? Okay, you pay for my husband and my kids.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's how we travel. Yeah.
What do they call that? The there's a term for it. It's like the list of demands, the drucket or the...
Your rider.
The rider. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I used to bring my oldest...
You guys are all in it.
Yeah, I used to bring my oldest to, like, community meetings when I was doing, like, disaster recovery stuff. And that was a neat way of just being like, here's what daddy's doing, and here's what I'm contributing, and here's what it's like. And then we can talk about it after, you know? And now it's that's true in, like, J.D. Vance and Elon are, like, toting their kids all over the place.
Yep.
Which hopefully becomes a trend. But, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is one of these things where, I mean, Ash, you've talked about this. Ash has been exemplar in this way. Is, I mean, Ash just had his eighth kid, and he mentioned how many home births have you guys done?
It was our first one.
First
wow.
one, yeah. And I just remember we were talking about it. And you said that it was like $5,500. How much was it?
There's more than that. More than that.
Yeah, like you're Portland. You're Portland. But he just basically said, yeah, I sold Bitcoin for it.
Yeah.
And again, like, there's people who are out there who are just, you know, clutching their pearls. Like, wait, what? And Ashwa just, he said, he's like, yeah, like, what is the point of Bitcoin? Like, what is the point of money? It's to be able to have experiences and to do things that are going to be meaningful. It's for a purpose. It's a tool that is meant to serve an end. And you just were like, you know, you just basically said, I would gladly, this is something that's important to my wife. It's something that, you know, is an experience that we were only going to get once, in the case of this particular child. And so, like, hey, I'm willing to sell Bitcoin to do this. And so I think that's a, you know, that it's a good test of, like, it's a good test and a good way to just look at, you know, a test of, like, hey, how am I thinking about these things? You know, am I willing, like, am I actually willing to sell Bitcoin at a time when, like, there's a very real chance that later this year Bitcoin could be four times higher than it is right now?
It's like, super important. Yeah. Super important conversation, this point, maybe even for another time. But I have not sold Bitcoin to fix my head gasket failure.
Yep. You're just Barney Rubble around there?
I'm still just taking it easy on the gas, you know. but I'm traveling with my family this summer to Europe, and I'm like, shucks, I may have to, you know. But I'm going to start shaking down the IRS and my county who hasn't paid me what they owe me first. Let's go. So priorities.
Yeah. Well, cool. We are speaking of serving our families. We are coming up on, I think we've been going for a while here, and I am 1 hour and 13 minutes, and I am headed out the door with my family. So you got to practice what I'm preaching.
Literally, my wife's gone, and I think the 14-year-old is babysitting all the kids from the, 14 down to 5. I have no idea what's going on.
Yep.
Well, you know, guys, you've inspired me the last couple of weeks. I'm planning to move my office over to my home office.
Let's go.
So that I don't have the messiest office on this podcast. So I'm not saying it's going to be next week, but it might be.
I just want to clarify again. I don't want to give a false impression. If you could see what my actual office looks like right now, it's incredible. The dichotomy between what is behind me and what is in front of me.
It's like one little tunnel of it's like stacked.
I'm actually not wearing pants right now. No, I'm joking. I'm just joking.
That's hilarious.
Anyhow. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys. Yeah. And again, for those of you who are listening, hopefully this has been helpful in some way. Again, this will not be the last. We'll be back next week to do another yet to be named podcast with Ryan and Ash. Appreciate you guys.